He's the pride of University School.
Don't forget that NFL Network gig.
He is the man.
Kind of a big deal.
The man everyone stops for autographs at Shaker Square. He is Chris Rose. Hi, Chris.
Christopher.
Hi, guys. Long time no chat. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. All is well.
Well, my friend, are you getting ready to make the trip back home here to get settled in for a little TV work here very soon?
Well, I'll be home for the third preseason game.
That's right.
So the rest of the stuff is on the road, and correct, joint practices are on the road and things of that nature. And got a few other work assignments, but I cannot wait for this one, because if you were to line up the 32 NFL teams from most interesting preseason game storylines to least interesting preseason game storylines, I have a feeling I know who's won.
Well, NFL.com yesterday said which one was number one, because it said little training camp battles that we're watching. There is a nice picture of four guys in an orange helmet and orange jerseys.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, Chris.
It is.
Now, which one?
Well, we've had this discussion all off.
Yeah, I know. Has it changed?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it has changed. I think that, it just hasn't. Now, to me, the narrative shifts a little bit now that we're starting camp. Somebody has to ask Kevin, okay, when do you need to know who the guy is? When is it best? And he might give you the whole, it's most important that we get the right guy, not when we get the right guy, which I understand. But you need to, I would be shocked if after the second preseason game against the Eagles and after those two joint practices we have with the defending Super Bowl champs that they don't know who it is. Let's put it this way.
Agreed.
If we still don't know who it is, then maybe somebody has either jumped off the page, i.e. one of the two rookies that they really didn't expect to, or they're like, man, we really need more time to figure this out.
Why is it in the back of my head I keep thinking, can Dylan Gabriel pull off what Russell Wilson pulled off in Seattle?
Yeah.
Do you think he can?
Well, right. I mean, you start with obviously the stature. Now Russell was a thicker guy when he came out.
Absolutely.
And his playmaking ability, I thought, even though the first couple of years that was really all about the Legion of Boom, guys had – Russell had that ability where guys would just bounce off of him, right? He would make a play, guy would bounce off of him, he'd look downfield and he'd throw it. And I don't know if Dylan Gabriel has that ability. I do think that he's got a decent arm. I've told you this, that I was down on the field for his throwing group in Indianapolis, and not everything was pinpoint, but I was more surprised about kind of the zip that the ball had coming out of his arm there. So I am fascinated. We all know that they like what he brings from the neck up. And obviously that's a big part of playing quarterback at this level, but you also have to be able to make every throw, and you have to have that skill set. And I think that that's why Jador is fascinating. Maybe people didn't see him as a first rounder. Maybe some people didn't even see him as a second rounder, but I think a lot of people are surprised that he was still around in the fifth. And, the guy deserves a chance to make the team and maybe to make a dent at some point as well.
Chris, I just felt like the team had a setback, even if you felt like there's like for fans that don't feel a lot of positive energy, there was still hope, I think, especially with two strong rookie running backs mm-hmm. coming in and Quinshon and Dylan. Your thoughts of, what do you do with the running back situation when you've got giant question marks about Quinshon Judkins? And I think it's probably fair to say that he's probably out for at least six games. I think that, or at least there's got to be a way to approach this thing. And, your thoughts on Dylan Sampson. I'm excited for him, too. I was excited, for both these guys together. But I think Sampson can have an impact in the league.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. And then that league's pretty good from what I hear.
That's what I was trying to tell Jeff this morning. Same thing.
Yeah.
Jeff didn't want to listen to me. Maybe he'll listen to you.
Yeah, he's new to football, so let's start off slow.
I was thrilled when they drafted him. I like that pick.
Yeah, And you do need multiple guys that can carry the rock. The Quinshon Judkins thing, I don't know where that – I can't sit here and say, well, here's where the league is definitively heading. I don't know. And so and the Browns don't know. So you just – you there's separate sides of that issue.
Right.
There is the human side, which is important. And then there is the football side, which is the business that we all cover. And sometimes when you get in, when they intersect, it becomes really challenging to talk about and discuss. So I just don't, I wouldn't even know how to go about that. You just, he's either there or he's not from a football standpoint. What you do about the contract situation, your expectations for him as a human being and things like that, it's a separate discussion, one that's very important, but it's totally different.
I'm real curious to see what the defense looks like with Mason Graham and with Carson Schlesinger. I mean, you drafted two guys with your first two picks who are going to line up right in the middle of that football field. And I think it's a real telling sign of what the organization is thinking about this team, Chris. And to be honest, the concept, the theory, hey, I drafted a defensive tackle in the middle of that line. I drafted a middle linebacker in the middle of that second level. I like it, but I sure hope those two guys can play.
Well, of course. They were your top two picks, so they better be able to play. And it's really important. You know, we haven't had a first-round pick since Greg Newsom. And we haven't struck gold on all of our second-round picks and our middle-round picks. And it's a little bit why the Browns are caught in this somewhat precarious situation of not having enough depth at certain spots. You know, one of the best picks we've made, unfortunately, his career is in question at this point with JOK. I actually think the linebacker room is one of the most interesting aspects of this team because it feels like there's a lot of guys that can play at a position where it feels, I'm not going to say it's being phased out because linebackers will never go anywhere, but to have a guy like Schlesinger who can do multiple things, meaning you don't have to pull him off the field, is enormous in today's game. When you're playing a lot of two linebacker sets, you've got to be able to fill the holes, to take on guards, to cover backs and tight ends, and he does that exceptionally well. And this is for a guy who was a zero-star recruit, essentially. Like he had to walk on at UCLA, and he got no run until his last year. So I think the thing is, was that last season an anomaly, or is he now building up and ready to take off in the football world? The things I work with a guy in MJD who is still plugged into the UCLA program, and he can't say enough great things about that kid. So I'm super excited for him. And with Mason Graham, because he's not Aaron Donald. That's not who he is. He's not doing these insane workouts and is chiseled out of granite. But what he is he's a dominant football player from Saturdays at Michigan from noon to 3 and hopefully on Sundays from 1 to 4. He just has this amazing leverage. And Daniel Jeremiah told me countless times he would watch this guy play and you look at him and you're like, gosh, really? Is he that good? And then he'd be the best player on the field. So that's what we need to hope for.
All right, let's switch gears here for a second to talk to the man that also hosts Dugout Discussions. Your thoughts on the Guardians being able to battle back to get to 500 and playing pretty good baseball right now. It's going to make the rest of the summer fun. It looked like for a second things were going to dive off, but they have really made a great charge in the last 11 games.
Am I a bad man to say I want Emmanuel Clase traded?
All right, well,
no.
My question is what do you want in return? You're not a bad man. If they get the boatload, then you're not a bad man.
Yeah, there's probably, I would say, five teams that need power right-handers in their bullpen to feel like they can win the World Series. I would say that the Dodgers definitely do. The Phillies, they signed David Robertson for like the 17th time this week. But they still need help at the back end. we would never trade him to the Tigers, but I still think that they could use somebody to pair with Will Vest back there. The Cubs definitely need him, and that's the place where I had him. We did a kind of a fictitious trade show that we did on Talking Baseball for John Boy Media, and I had Class A going to the Cubs because I think it's a perfect matchup. I think they desperately need him because they've got guys, they have four guys that they're really counting on that are free agents after this year. So Class A not only helps you maybe win it all in 2025, but you have him for the next 3 years at a reasonable number too, if you exercise the options. And the Cubs have guys that are ready to be big leaguers. They just don't have spots for them. So we need all the help you can get lineup-wise. To me, it's a perfect fit.
So are you saying forget about the playoffs this year? Is that what I'm asking? Are you saying that knowing that you got Smith, I mean, you've got an unproven closer compared to the guy that was unbelievable last year. Can you trade Class A and still feel like you're competitive enough to make the playoffs and really scare the you-know-what out of the American League if that possibility is there?
Okay, well, I'll say it this way. What do you need in order for a guy to get a save in a game? What do you need?
Three outs and a lead.
Yeah.
You need the lead, which means you need to score runs. This offense, and I get it, since we lost 10 in a row, I think we've ripped off 9 of 11. Mm-hmm. And our schedule is significantly softer now than it was when we were running into all sorts of issues.
Right.
But do you feel like this team, as presently constructed offensively,
no,
is good enough to win multiple playoff series?
No. But I'm not going to say I can't win two series before I win one. And I think they do have the pitching that might be able to get them in a situation to advance. I just don't know how far. And I can't, if you make the playoffs, you make the playoffs. So this, sitting around here going, well, you can't win two series. It's like, I can't personally live like that.
Yeah.
Give me the opportunity to get there. You know,
I do understand that, but we have developed one outfielder.
I know.
In the last 12 plus years, and it's Stephen Kwan. One. So everybody else that's come through here, whether it's been Tyler Naquin or Bradley Zimmer or Nolan Jones, anybody else that you want to give a shot to, it has not worked. Sometimes over the last 20 years, we've been very good at trading for other teams' players.
True.
And there's a kid named Owen Casey who is killing it right now in Chicago. Now, I don't know if you could pry him loose from the Cubs. But man, oh man, I think he is going to be a great ball player. And he's ready to play right now. They just have the best outfield in baseball, and there's no spot for him. They've got four outfielders. Seiya Suzuki is great, and he's a DH every day. So they just don't have a spot for him. I'm telling you, man, from both standpoints, if I could make one trade happen, it's the one, and I get it. People are like, hold on. You're trading Class A? Folks, reliever, it is a finicky business. One year they can be great, and the next one they can be horrific. It happens all the time.
Take a look at the first month of this season, right?
Yeah, but to his credit, he's figured it out, and he might not be the same guy we saw last year during the regular season, but he has been really better than most still. So I'm not taking this lightly about trading him, but I do think it's something you've got to strongly consider to make this offense watchable, because for 90% of the year, it has been unwatchable.
The name that I've seen from the Cubs is the other outfielder, Kevin Alcantara, the 6'6" yeah. kid.
Yes, and he's a right-handed power bat. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Both really interesting guys. With that thought in mind, Chris, what went through your head when you watched the Guardians load up on big power-hitting college hitters in the draft? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, it went away from what they've been.
Yep.
So I think that was somewhat refreshing. I do think they have to take a strong look at what they're doing organizationally. You know, why haven't we been able to produce solid major league hitters when other teams are? And, you know, they've been a really, really good organization. They've given us a lot of joy in the last 12 years, right? Ever since Tito got on, you never felt like, boy, we're lost. We might have had some bad seasons thrown in there, but you never felt lost. And I just think that if we're ever going to get past a certain stage, we're going to have to start hitting on these draft picks. You just have to. They have figured out the pitching formula. They really have. And I'll give them a ton of credit, because for years we could hit the crap out of the baseball, but we just couldn't figure out the pitching side as well as we needed to. Now we've pretty much done that in both the starting rotation with guys that I didn't think could be, you know, credible major leaguers, Logan Allen and Joey Cantillo, but they have been. They've been guys, they're not dominant, but you don't feel terrible about throwing them out there every fifth day. But the lineup guys, there's three everyday major leaguers in their lineup, and Carlos is really at the end of his line. It's Hosey, it's Kwan, and then it's a bunch of guys who deserve to be on major league rosters, but probably not playing as much as they should. You know, that, I'm sorry if people's feelings are hurt on that one, but that's the way I see it.
Chris, before we let you go, we haven't had a chance to talk yet. I thought the All-Star game was a home run. You guys did some fantastic stuff with John Boy down at the All-Star game as well. Just your thoughts on that, because it finally felt like we had an All-Star game winner, and I don't care that it came down to a home run derby or a swing off or whatever they wanted to call it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was good for the game.
I thought it was a blast. I loved the swing off.
I did,
I mean,
too.
Like, who cares? Who won the All-Star game 2 years ago? Nobody cares. That stuff doesn't...
American.
That doesn't matter. You want to... Good for you.
I'm just guessing. I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, well, there were only two teams that played. So good job.
The American League kills them, so it's like...
Oh, golly.
But yeah, I thought it was a blast. Would it have been better if Shohei and Judge had been in it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Kyle Schwarber gave us a pretty good moment, and I thought that was neat. And Jonathan Aranda almost hit one to that would have tied it up, and I would have liked to have seen Pete Alonso get some final swings to give the National League a win. But I thought the idea was right, and it's still the most watchable of all the All-Star games. Yep. Are there tweaks that can be made? Absolutely. But I thought overall it was a really fun experience, and I loved that the Kwani beat out an infield hit to force this swing off. I thought that was great.
Yep, guards ball. Chris, give us your agenda so we can catch up with you on your national media tour of everything you do. What do you got going on right now?
Yeah, still got Dugout Discussions that comes out every Monday on our JM Baseball YouTube channel. Every day I do a show with Trevor Plouffe, former Minnesota Twin. We have a great time. Baseball today, we break down all the topics. We actually talked yesterday, you should go check this out on our YouTube page, about Jose Ramirez and where he ranks among Manny Machado and Nolan Arenado, you know, among the great third basemen of today. That was a real interesting one. And then I just finished, the reason I haven't been talking to you, we just brought back the show American Gladiators.
Hmm.
And so I was teamed with another former, well, once a Clevelander, always a Clevelander, The Miz.
Yes.
The Miz was the host. I'm the guy calling the events. We our co-host is a woman named Roxy Diaz, kind of from the entertainment world. And it's going to be coming out on Amazon Prime in early 2026, and it's a blast.
Very nice, Chris. Thank you. We appreciate you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Chris.
Thank you, bud.